does anybody here run cross country?
You right?
Like, you actually run it? What's your name? All right, Daniel. Daniel, are you serious about cross country? Like, yes. You're all right. I need you to do me a favor. Just stand right there. Just run in place for me. Anybody else run? Don't stop. Just keep doing it. Bryce, do the same thing for me. Just run in place right there for me. Anybody else cross country? Can't see your name over it. Grant, just do the same thing for me, please. Just run in place. Don't stop. You say you run cross country. This won't be long. All right, thanks. All right, so if you have your Bibles, go ahead and be turning to the book of Ecclesiastes. We're going to be in Ecclesiastes. Don't worry about them. They'll just be doing their thing there. That's good. I like the commitment. Opening up his Bible while he's running. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 is where we're going to start here in a second. Say, open up your Bibles to Ecclesiastes. I should probably open up my Bible to Ecclesiastes as well. I can almost like draw it out before I really even get to the point. All right, Ecclesiastes chapter 1. I know like you think I'm being mean to them, but I promise you, this is nothing compared to what you actually do. So he's fine. He's chilling, he says. So, y'all don't know me. Most of y'all don't. If you're a Weaver, you do. If you're Jesse, you do. I think some other people here may have met me at some point, but this is good because I like to play a game. This is the game I like to play with people usually. So there's a few different things I want to do here. So if you are 14 or under, raise your hand. There's a lot of people here. When I was your age, I had never opened the Bible or touched the Bible in my life. So like you can just kind of put that in your back pocket here for a second. If you are 16 or younger, raise your hand. All right, at this point, I had not been a Christian. And then we're like, we won't do this again, right? So, okay, this is a game I like to play. And we're going to get to the lesson in just a second. This is good. This is a quick game. Just like a little get to know me. So I'm from New York, so born and raised in New York City. Spanish is my native language, but I learned English, you know, in school and in TV, like the rest of y'all probably. I've got a few siblings, and this is what I'm going to do. If anybody guesses this correctly, $20 for you. We can have multiple people who have the right guess. I want you to guess, we're going to play the honor system here. I want you to guess the amount of siblings I have. What'd you say?
Seven.
Incorrect. Just throw the numbers out.
Three.
11, 3, what'd you say? 27, incorrect. 13, incorrect. 1, incorrect. If you're near a Weaver, you are not allowed to answer. Huh?
Four.
Incorrect. All right, we're going to stop. Did anybody say, huh? I'm one of eight from mom and dad. So close.
28.
Did anybody say 26? Did you actually say 26? Okay, thank you. He said no. All right, so my dad had 27 children, 28, but one is not actually a child, and we don't actually include him, but like 28 kids, 27, 28. Y'all were getting answers from other people. Josephine.
Sorry?
Don't have to apologize. It's okay. I come from a pretty big family. All right, here's the second question I'd like to do, just to like get to know me here. Can anybody guess what my parents did, what my dad did for a living growing up? Let me just tell you, it was not Christianity. I was not doing this. What'd you say? I thought you had a guess. I was excited for it.
Carpenter.
Huh?
Farmer?
No. Carpenter? No. Go a little bit weirder. Huh? I wish. No. Ooh, I like it. So witchcraft and sorcery and black magic. Yeah. That's what I was raised in. So I want you to think about this for a second. Stick with me here. I want you to think about this for a second. Unless you are 14... and you have never opened up a Bible in your life, which all of you have Bibles open here, so it's not you already. And your parents did witchcraft and sorcery and black magic. Like, that's what you grew up with. Like, seeing exorcisms. You know, like, you, like, see those movies and, like, that's what I saw, quote-unquote, growing up. And spirits and stuff like that. Yep, it's not real. But I say this to say, if you would have told me that 14 years later, I'd be talking to people about God, I would have laughed in your face. Because that would have been a joke. Who is God anyways? Like the world that I grew up in, I forgot y'all were running. The world that I grew up in, God didn't exist. But let me tell you what did exist in the world that I grew up in. What existed in the world that I grew up in was brokenness. And so as a 14-year-old, I could think back and remember dealing with this question. Like, what's wrong with my life? You don't have to have my upbringing and maybe sometimes ask yourself this question. You don't have to be 14. You could be younger. You could be older. But have you ever asked yourself this question? Like, is everything actually fine with my life? You know? Yeah, you may ask yourself that every day, possibly. I've got big ears. I can listen. Maybe here's another question, right? Maybe you don't phrase it like that. Maybe you ask yourself this question. The question you ask yourself is like, I just don't get what the point of life is. Like, I'm alive. I've been alive for however many days or years I've been alive, and I still really haven't figured out what the point of all of this is. Because I get up and I go to school. Okay, you go to school, that's great. And you go to school to get a job, that's great. And you get a job to work, that's great. And you work to get money, that's great. And you get money to buy stuff, that's great. But eventually you're going to die. So like, then what's actually the point of anything you do? You know what I mean? Like, this was the questions that at 14 I was thinking about. Like, what's the, like, you're going to die. And if you're going to die, then what's the point of anything you ever do? Maybe here's another question, right? Like, is any of this actually even real? Or like, are we just computers? Is this just some sort of simulation? Yeah, like the Matrix. I didn't see that, but I'm assuming that's probably what it's like, you know? Like, is anything in my life substantial? Does anything that I do hold any real purpose or value? Will it ever hold any purpose or value? Is anything that you do substantial? Does anything that you do hold any value? And how would you know? Right, so the book of Ecclesiastes, there's this guy who's essentially asking himself this question. And what he is going to do, and if you can read this, great. If you can't, y'all should be able to read that. What he's going to do is he's going to try to answer this question of, again, like, what's the purpose of everything that I do? Like, what's the point of my life? And really, he's going to try to answer this question with, what's the point of my life if I lived my life without God? So for a second, I just want you to imagine that you are Bill at 14. So God does not exist. There is no God. There's spirits. There's like weird beings and stuff like that that you're kind of like superstitious about. But like, there is no actual God. So if there is no God, what is the point of life? So this is, again, what I think the Ecclesiastes writer is trying to answer. This is going to be the question he's going to try to deal with. And what I want us to do is I just want us to kind of go through, we're going to take a little test here. You can't fail because the answer is in chapter 2. So, but we're going to take a little test here. And we're going to try to ask ourselves, like, what are the answers? And what, where will I find the answer to the question he's going to ask here in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 3. And so if someone could read verses 1 through 3 to get started. You want to read?
Yeah, let's go. Right. The word of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage does man have in all his works, which he is under the sun?
Okay, so the book opens up, and again, you have the words of the preacher, and in verse 2, he says something. What does he say in verse 2? Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. By the way, the book starts with this idea of vanity of vanities, and in chapter 12, verse 8, it'll finish, kind of, he'll conclude with this idea, vanity of vanity. So all throughout the book, he's going to talk about this word vanity. What does vanity mean? Wyatt?
Emptiness.
Emptiness, yeah. And anybody else have like a different idea? No, that's good. So emptiness is a good picture here. Here's another way to kind of picture it, right? Take your hand. Everybody can do this, whether you're sitting or standing. Take your hand, blow into your hand as hard as you can. Keep blowing, keep blowing. Grab it. Grab it. Don't pass out, Ben. But blow into your hand. Grab it. All right, now open it up. What do you have?
Nothing. Air.
Is there air there, actually? Like, no, no, but all right, no, no. Maybe you didn't do it right the first time. You didn't do it right. Like, have both hands. Use both hands, because maybe this way you'll actually cup it. Like, blow as hard as you possibly can into your hands. All right, now grab it. All right, what do you have? There's nothing. But, like, you're saying there's nothing, but, like, did you feel something when you were blowing? And where'd it go? That's what he's saying when he says vanity of vanities, is things are like a breath. It's like, so it's not that it's non-existent. It's not that it's not real, but there's no lasting effect to it. Why?
Just
Yes, that's going to be the idea, striving after the wind, trying to grasp the wind. It's this idea that you're trying to grab something that's there, but that holds no substance, it holds no value. And so this is how he starts the book. He'll say, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And then he asks a question in verse 3. And what's the question that he asks? Yeah, so what advantage, or maybe another way you can view it is, what profit does man have for all the labors which he labors with under the sun? I paraphrase that may be wrong. Nah, it's okay, it's about there. So what advantage, what lasting advantage do you have for everything that you do? And when he says, like, what advantage, he doesn't mean, like, if you work, you don't get paid. That's not really the picture. I think the idea is, at the end of all of this, what do you end up with? What's the advantage that you gain from everything that you do? What he's going to do from verses 4 through 8, and really the rest of chapter 1, but for the sake of time, we're not going to do it, and these guys are running. But what he's going to do from verses 4 through 8 is he's going to show you that actually there's a hole inside of you. I like it. You can do this little dance here. That there's a hole that's inside of you that needs to be filled. And the way he's going to illustrate it is he's going to say, just open your eyes and look at the world around you. Notice that the world around you is actually vain. So someone read verses 4 through 8 for us. You can either read it from the screen or read it from your Bibles, but someone read it out loud for us. Let's have a girl read since we had a guy read first. Josephine, you're already here. Yep.
A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on its surface the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the stream flows, there they flow again. All the things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye cannot satisfy with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing.
All right. So I want you to notice here, again, he's gonna try to like say, I want you to notice that there is a hole inside of you. So what he says, he starts off with in verse 4 by saying what? What has come, what has gone?
A
generation comes and a generation goes. And what has stayed the same? One more time? The earth. It's just remained. You know, like, it wasn't that long ago, I was talking to my wife about this, 10 years ago, I graduated high school. It was weird for me to think about because I'm assuming if you ask anybody in the back, not anybody, if you ask some of the people in the back, you gotta be careful. 10 years ago was like yesterday. But to me, like 10 years ago, I'm like, oh, you're 16. That's cool. I'm kind of close to 16. It's like I'm really not anymore. I'm 28. But here's the thing. Like, I used to think I was like a young high school guy. Like, now I'm bald and I've got a baby. And like, I've been bald for a while. But you get a baby and like you feel really old. Have you really?
Yeah.
Hot dog. Have y'all had it too?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, keep running. Keep running. Don't stop now. But here's the picture. He says, a generation comes and a generation goes. Like right now, you're 14, 15, 16, 17. Like at some point, you'll no longer be the young person. At some point, you'll be like the person in your mid to late 20s. Then you'll be the person in your 40s. Then you'll be the person in your 60s, your 70s, and you won't be like the young gun anymore. You're going to come, you're going to go, and the next generation will come up, and they'll think that they're... I remember, like, when I was in high school, I thought I was the coolest thing in the world. I'm not even close. But, like, I thought I was. And, huh? That's really cool. Thank you. I used to think I was, but I'm not. Like, I know that I'm not, and that's okay. I can live with that. But the thing, like, it's funny because, like, I see some other young people, and you know what they think? They think they're the coolest things in the world. And, like, then they'll grow up, and they'll be like, oh, okay, I'm not. Then there'll be some other, like, and that's just kind of what happens. And I remember when I was, like, 15, 16, 17, I thought I had the answers for everything. And, like, I feel like the older I get, I'm like, I actually don't know much of anything. And, like, there's this picture that this generation comes, this generation goes. But then he continues, and he says, as a matter of fact, just look at the earth around you. In verse 5, the sun does what every single morning? It rises. And every single night, what has the sun done? It sets. And it's almost like he's like, look at the world. The sun, it rises, it sets. It rises and it sets. And it rises and it sets. And what's the point? It just goes through this repetition over and over and over again. And at no point has the sun ever said, you know what? I think I'm done. I've done it all these times. I'm filled. This has been pretty cool. I've done, like, it just does it. He continues in verse 6. He says, in fact, look at the winds. Like the winds, they blow in this pattern and it does it over and over again. In verse 7, he says, all the rivers, what do? They flow into the sea, and what does the sea, or what has the ocean never said? What? I'm full.
Because of the water cycle.
Yeah, but the picture that that Ecclesiastes 1 has given is like, the rivers always run into the ocean, and at no point has the ocean said, you know what, I think I'm done now. You've given me enough water, I'm full. You don't have to give me anymore. He says in verse 8, in the same way, the eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear with hearing. You branch that out. And again, I think what he's trying to help you understand is that there's a hole inside of you. And it, deep down inside, whether you've acknowledged this or not, you know that it's there. If you can hear, which hopefully you can, because I'm talking right now, but if you can hear or listen, you've been listening for however long you've been alive. Are you like done listening? Like, do you wish you can just never listen again? I've been seeing for 28 years. I want to keep seeing. I've been eating for 28 years. I want to keep eating. I've been smelling for like, and his point is like, look at your senses. You've been doing and doing and doing and doing. You've always done these things. And at no point have you actually told yourself, this is enough. I'm actually satisfied. The illustration that always comes to my mind is like running. How long have you ran now?
1.315 minutes.
All right. So he's ran. You don't have your name tag. What's your name tag? What's his name tag? What's your name again?
Daniel.
All right. So Daniel has ran almost a mile and a half. How far and how long have y'all ran? About the same?
Yeah.
Let's say these guys have ran over a mile. How far have they gotten?
Nowhere.
Y'all can stop running. Thank you. Here's the picture. When you live your life without God, you will run and you will run and you will run and you will run and you will get to the end of your life and realize that you have gotten nowhere. That you start your life, and so like I saw this, right, for the first time ever, I saw a life starting. And that little life starts with nothing. No clothes, no shelter, no money. Like he was born with nothing, with us. But like he himself had nothing. At some point, when I die, you know what I'm going to take with me? Nothing. And if life under the sun is all that there is, like if you think that life without God is life, you have to realize that it's like running on a treadmill. That you will spend your whole life running. And like, did you run? You ran. Like that's a real thing that happened. They actually ran. These things, but they got to, like, you finished and they didn't end up any further than where they started. So what's going to end up happening, right? So you're going to think to yourself, you're like, but no, I hear you're saying that, but surely what if I filled my life with X thing? Like, yeah, that's for them because they were just running in place. Or sure, some people, they get to the end of their lives and they don't have anything, but that's because they haven't tried this. And maybe if I tried this, then maybe, just maybe, I'm going to actually be filled. So what the author is going to do, what the preacher is going to do in chapter 2 is he's going to take a test. He's going to say, come now, I'm going to test you with. The idea of he's going to test his body with a few different things, looking for something that's going to fill him up. And what I want us to do is I want us to go and read verses 1 through 11 and look at this test that he takes. I shouldn't have done that. So we're going to have to go through it all and then get to the end. I want us to look at this test that he takes and notice as he takes the test, the different answers he gives. For maybe this might fill me up, or maybe that might fill me up, or maybe this might be the thing that'll make me feel filled. And we'll see the answer he gets at the end of the test. So someone read verses 1. Actually, let's divvy it up. Someone read verses 1 through 5, and someone read verses 6 through 11 for me, please. Let's have a guy and then a girl. Yep. Thanks, Jacob.
I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also is man. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, that I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees.
Then a female, verses 6 through 11.
Thank you.
Yes, verse 11 as well. Thank you. All right, so I want you to notice here the test that Solomon or the preacher here is taking. So remember, I need to find something that gives me some profit at the end of everything, that when I do this thing, there'll be some lasting advantage for me. By the way, like, do you notice what words, even before we get into the test, do you notice what word stands out over and over and over again in verses 1 through 11?
I.
Yeah. Over and over and over again, I did this. I did that. What was that? Yes, I, myself, me, my. And I think one of the lessons we need to see, even, like, this isn't in the notes, it's just a little freebie you get here. I think one of the lessons we need to see is that the idea of finding satisfaction in yourself actually leaves you lonely. That whenever you think ultimate satisfaction and ultimate purpose is finding yourself and finding who you are, and, like, and that it's just in me, in my truth, what you end up with is emptiness, which is where he finishes at the end of verse 11. So he says again, let's take this test here. So he's going to test himself with some things. And what are some of the things he tests himself with? So like verse 1, he mentions one. Come, I will test you with what? With pleasure. All right, do you know somebody who does that today? That they think, well, maybe if I just party a little bit harder, I'll be a little more satisfied. You know, by the way, so I didn't say this in the little fun fact here, but like I like math. It's what I studied in school. I know, theoretical mathematics. Woohoo! So like I like numbers. I always think about people who talk about living for the weekend. You ever like heard that phrase? Like, I'm going to live for the weekend. You ever thought about how dumb that is? I don't know if I'm allowed to say dumb or not, but I did. So not how silly that is. The weekend is how many days of the week? Three if you're being generous, but technically two. So the end of Friday into like, you got to think you got to work Monday morning, and so into like early mid Sunday. Talking about 2 days. How many days are there in the week? Seven. Quick math would tell you that two out of seven is what? Anybody knows the percentage there?
30%.
Close to 30%. It's 28.5. It's 29%, 30%, which means that you dread your life for 70% of your, like 70% of your life you actually hate, because all you want to do is get to the weekend. So that idea of people who live their lives and say like, come now, I'm just going to test my life with pleasure. And so if my life just becomes one big party where all I have to do is I'm just going to like hang out with my friends and get drunk and do whatever it is I'm going to do, and surely that's going to be the thing that I love. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, the party ends. And so you wake up the next day. And are you any more satisfied? Are those people any more satisfied than they were before? All right, so then that's not the right answer, right? So he's gonna try other things, because like clearly, you have more than one answer. So he keeps going. What's the next thing he says? Of laughter, it is madness. So I always think about this picture, right? So again, think about this idea. You ever met somebody that to them everything is a joke? That they never want to take anything seriously. Because if I have to actually think seriously about anything, it makes me uncomfortable. That I don't like who I am, or I don't like where things are. And so if maybe I can just make it a joke, then it's okay. And then it's fine. And I never deal with the reality of things, because everything is just like a ha-ha joke. And you can joke things off, but at the end of the day, does that change your reality? Does it change the world you live in? It doesn't. All right, so that doesn't work. Well, let's keep going. Because like maybe we'll find an answer in one of these, you know? So let's keep going. Let's see what's next here. So he continues. In verse 3, what does he try? Yeah, so you know what? Maybe if I just kind of stimulate my body a little bit. I don't actually think he's talking about getting drunk, because he says my wisdom was with me. Like, I don't think he's, but if I just stimulate my body, if I make myself just feel good, if the purpose of my life is just about making my body feel good, whether that's with wine or it's working out or it's, you fill in the blank, to where I just feel good all the time. He'll get to verse 11 and he'll say this wasn't it either. Verses 4 through 6, let's kind of speed it up a little bit here. Verses 4 through 6, what does he try? Yeah, possession. So I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I had vineyards. I had this. I had that. And again, like, so you think about it, right? Because maybe when you're young, what you want to do is party. When then you start growing up a little bit, and you're like, you know what? The party's kind of faded away. I don't actually care about that anymore. Now the most important thing to me is my house. That's just the biggest thing in my life, is building this house and having this house and making sure that in this thing, like, that's where I find my purpose. Can I be a little uncomfortable with y'all? Is that okay? Thanks. I just needed somebody to say yes. So my dad died 5 years ago of pancreatic cancer. And when he died, we found out he had cancer at the end of December. He died the 6th of February, so a month. I was living in Georgia. I went up to go visit him. I spent a weekend just talking with him. My dad was 76 when he died. One thing I think about often is a conversation that he and I had. My dad never had any time to think about God, because the most important things in his life were women, which he's going to get to next year, and homes. So my family's from the Dominican Republic. I said Spanish is my native language. That's where my family's from. My dad has an 11, because this is not my dad has an 11-bedroom house in the Dominican Republic that he never stepped foot in. So what's the point of you working your whole life to build something, to die? Because you don't get to keep it. You can build the greatest thing that has ever existed, and at some point, it won't be yours anymore. Strangers live in that house. None of his children do, and he has a lot of them. Other people live there. So building, that's not it. You know, like just saying, I'm just going to work and work and have and build and create stuff, and like, that's where I'll find my ultimate satisfaction. You actually get to the end and say, this isn't it. Because again, remember, you're going to die. Well, he continues. And what's the next thing in verse 7? Women. So he'll actually say, I bought male and female slaves. You even think about this idea of like, if someone has, so again, being Hispanic, watched a lot of telenovelas growing up, or like Spanish soap operas. And in like the telenovelas, you always knew like who was of esteem because they had like maids in the house. And I think there's this picture that like, look, I had male and female slaves. I had servants in the house. I just had people serving. And you just imagine like, if I just could live my life not ever having to lift a finger, like then I'll be made. Then I'll have it all. Or if I just had women at my disposal, or males, whatever, at my disposal to do, if I just had relationships, if I just had this one relationship or these multiple relationships, that this thing is going to fill me up. And it doesn't. He continues, because again, like you could say, like, well, all those things, like those are kind of like empty, shallow things, right? So he continues, and what's the next thing he goes for? What was that? So music. And like, let's look at particularly in verse nine. He provided for him. He had gold, he had silver. And I think again, that goes with the idea of like, he had all these treasures, these possessions. He had all the music. I mean, you just imagine, which like you have more music now, like in Spotify or iTunes than they ever did. But like, you just have all the music. You have all this stuff. You have everything. And here's the thing. Like, if you think about the world that you live in today, there is more at your disposal today than they had, than the king here had at his disposal then. When he talks about building houses and having stuff and having fancy stuff, like he didn't have a toilet. That's just customary. Like, we have so much more stuff than they ever have. Are people any more satisfied today within themselves? You're more connected to people than you've ever been. People are, through social media. And they're more empty than they've ever been. People have more stuff than they've ever had, and they're more empty than they've ever been. He continues, and he says that, in fact, I just decided that all those things are kind of like empty, they're vain, they're childish. So I decided to do what in verse 9? I'm just going to become better than everybody else at this, at a thing. So could you imagine this, that you become the greatest at a particular thing? You think that would make, like, that would satisfy you? Does anybody have somebody that they think is the greatest at something? Like, say a sport, like somebody who's the greatest at a particular sport. Okay, I don't agree with the Michael Jordan thing, but let's take Michael Jordan for example. So Michael Jordan, a lot of people would say, is the greatest basketball player of all time. Have you ever like seen an interview with Michael Jordan? The dude is miserable. You know why? Because even though he got to, in a lot of people's eyes, to be the greatest, like, was it like, all right, Michael Jordan's the greatest at basketball, no one is ever going to play the sport again, and no one is ever going to try to be better than him. Is that? No, what you end up having is all these other conversations where, like, are somebody going to be better than him? Is someone going to be greater than him? And you know what he can't do? He can't put on shoes and basketball shorts and step on a court and play anymore. And so he just has to sit and watch other people try to be better than him at this thing. And he's miserable because of it. Like, you can be the greatest and the best at fill-in-the-blank thing, whatever you think is the most special thing in this world under the sun. You can get to be the best at that thing. And so he takes this test, and he goes through all these things. There it is. It is working now. He gets to all these things thinking, this is the end I'm going to get to. Lasting satisfaction. That if I just do this thing, that at the end of it, this is the result that I want. And notice, like, does he say that he's miserable and he hates his life because he did all of this? What does he actually say in verse 10? Did you notice? Anything that my hands wanted, that my eyes wanted, I didn't stop myself from getting anything that I wanted. And there was what? So notice, all that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold from my heart any pleasure, for my heart was what? Right before the vantage. So verse 10, he says, for my heart was what? Yet rejoiced, or my heart was pleased in doing these things. So, like, here's what I don't want to do, right, is to tell you that if you lived your life like this, that you're going to actually be sad all the time, because that's actually not true. He actually says, I was kind of happy. And people who live their lives making this the thing of their life, there's a measure of happiness that they find in it. But that's not the question of the test here. The question isn't, will you be happy? The question is, what's the point? Will you find satisfaction? And this is the answer he actually got to. At the end of verse 11, he says, at the end of all of this, what did I actually find? Vanity and striving after the wind. That I could do all of these things and at the end of all of this be in the same place that I started in. So what do we do with this? Right? Like, how do we make sense of life? If there's this huge gaping hole in us, then what is the point? I've got some verses that I know for a fact you won't be able to read. So I want you to open up your Bibles. So Ecclesiastes chapter 1, someone read verse 15, and then someone else go start looking for Ecclesiastes 3, verse 16. So if someone has Ecclesiastes 1:15, you can go ahead and read it for us. And then someone read chapter 3, verse 16, and read verse 16, and then chapter 4, verse 1 for us. All right, so you notice what he's saying here in chapter 1, verse 15. He says what's broken cannot be counted. And then he continues again, and he actually does this throughout the whole book, but I picked one of my favorite ones, where the king is looking, and he's like, this world is just oppression. And there's actually oppression and sadness on both sides, both on the people who cause oppression and on the people who are being oppressed. Everybody's broken. Everybody's sad. What do I do with this? I think the first lesson that I want to kind of drive home is that we need to understand that there is a brokenness here. And the reason why we need to understand that is because if I can understand that the world outside of God is broken, that'll help me understand that wholeness isn't found in the world. That it's found somewhere else. That if I can, like, it's like doing a puzzle. Imagine you were going to do a puzzle, and I told you, all right, the puzzle's got 1,000 pieces. It's supposed to have 1,000 pieces. But I'm going to give it to you, but it's missing 75 pieces. Do you really want to do that puzzle? You got missing pieces. It's not filled. Like, why even bother? The idea is, again, life here without God is broken. And that brokenness should inspire us. It should push us and motivate us to help us understand that wholeness isn't found in the things here. Right, I want us to look at another verse here. Someone go to chapter 11 and read verses 9 through chapter 12, verse 1. So Ecclesiastes 11, verses 9 through 12, 1. Anybody can read it.
Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the day of your youth. Walk away with your heart inside your eyes, but know that in all these things God will bring you with judgment. Remove vexation from your heart, remove away pain from your body, for you have the dawn of life by vanity. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come, and you draw near, of which you say, I have no pleasure.
Do you know what he tells you to do in verse 9? What does he tell you to do? Rejoice while you're young. And then he says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth, because you're gonna get old, and I'm not old, but you can talk to old people, I guess. No, but like you'll hit a time where like the things you used to delight in, the things you used to think were fun, like you just won't enjoy those things anymore. Hey, here's I don't want you to be like misunderstand what I'm saying. The point isn't like the world is terrible, don't ever enjoy anything, life is miserable, because that's not what he's saying. I think the actual point here is that we need to learn to enjoy the things under the sun without giving them ultimate purpose. That like, if you want to talk to me about baseball, outside of God and Christianity, baseball is probably like in all the things that come with that. So, you know, like my wife, my baby, all that good stuff. Like outside of that, I'm not sure there's a thing I love more than baseball. Like, I love me some baseball. And I love the Red Sox in particular because they're the best team in baseball. But, like, they are. What was that? That was, like, that was legitimately funny. No, but, like I love baseball. I go, like, I love traveling to watch baseball. It's what I do with my free time when my wife allows it. It's like I go and I watch baseball games. Like, I watch it on TV. I play, like, I have a PlayStation 5. I play video games. Like, I'm a kid. And I like stuff. And I like music. And I like to play sports. And I like to play video games. And I like to watch TV and play. Like, I like all that stuff. But here's what all that stuff isn't for me. That's not the end-all, be-all of my life. It's not like if I never watched another baseball game again, my life would be over. Because as much as I love baseball, that's all that it is. It's just baseball. As much as I love video games, that's all that it is. It's just video games. As much as I love sports, that's all that it is. It's just sports. And if I have it, that's great. And if I don't have it, that's fine. And here's the beauty, is that whenever you can actually do this, you end up enjoying those things more. Because think about this, right? Do you have a fridge at home? Raise your hand if you have a fridge. All right. Keep your hand raised if your fridge cooks your food for you. Could you imagine expecting your fridge to cook for you? If you expected your fridge today to cook for you, would you be very happy with your fridge? Why not? Because it doesn't do that for you. And like, that's not the purpose of your fridge. It's not intended to cook. It's got a different purpose. And if you can understand the fridge is to, you know, refrigerate and preserve the food, then you can appreciate the fridge for what it is. If you can think about the things under the sun for what they actually are, your friends and the relationships and the fun that you can have, if you can think about those things for what they are and appreciate them for what they are, you will enjoy them so much more. Because there was a point in my life where, like, baseball was God. And, like, when things went poorly, whether that was, like, me playing baseball or watching baseball, it was like my world ended over a game. That doesn't actually matter that much. But then you start to put that in perspective, and you're like, oh, it's, like, they win, great, I celebrate, I'm super happy. They lose, that's whatever. You know, it's not the end of the world. But again, when you can learn to put the things under the sun in perspective, it's okay. You don't have to, like, they don't have absolute purpose. You end up appreciating those things a little bit more. Since you're still in chapter 11, someone read verses 1 through 4. I promise you we're almost done here. You're already ready. You don't have to read it. Micah, do you want to read for us? Micah's got it for us. Chapter 11, verses 1 through 4. All right, so I want you to notice, in verse 1, what does he tell you to do?
Just to grow in the water.
All right, so think about the picture here. It's like you have bread, and you're letting go. Now, how much sense does that make if, like, for the bread that you want to eat today, if you're casting it upon the waters? Huh? It almost seems wasteful. Because you're like, I don't get to have this bread anymore. Like, I sacrificed this bread. And he says, cast your bread upon the waters, and after many days, you will find it. I want you to think about maybe an image here. Where it's like, we have to learn to make sacrifices today. You have to learn to say no to some things today so that you can have eternity. Because the truth is, as much as we can enjoy things under the sun, as much as we can think about the fact that this world is broken and seeing it for what it is, unless I personally start to say no to some things here under the sun, I'm never going to have eternity because my life is going to be about the things here under the sun. Here's my favorite thing. And like, now, I usually read from a New American Standard, and that's what the verse is up there as well. But if somebody has an ESV, I want you to read from the ESV here. So throughout the whole book, someone who has not read, I'm going to let you read here for it. So throughout the whole book, he's talked about vanity, 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 emptiness, emptiness, a whisper, emptiness, emptiness. Everything is vain. Everything is vain. What's the purpose of anything? This is how he finishes the book, chapter 12, verses 13 and 14. So this is what I love about the way this book ends. Remember, we talked about taking a test. He finishes the book by saying there's going to be a test. Which, by the way, I don't know like how you think about Judgment Day. For a long time, I dreaded it. Like, afraid of it. It doesn't sound fun. It's scary. If there is no Judgment Day, then nothing you ever do will ever matter. There is no point in anything. Any of, like, if you've ever, like, been kind to, like, a small little kid or someone in need or any, like, there's no point to anything you ever do if there is no judgment. It just doesn't matter. The fact that there is a judgment, though, at least to me, reminds me that at some point, like, God is going to recompense the things that I've been doing. And notice, again, the way that he phrases it. He says, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the what? The whole duty of man. This whole time you've been talking about vanity, vanity, and things are broken, and how do I find wholeness? Wholeness is found in God. And so, like, what do I do with my life? What's the point of things? What's the point of life? The point of life is to fear God and keep his commandments, where you live your life not afraid, like, God's going to strike me down, lightning, like, that's not so much the picture, but like, I understand that there is a God, and I'm reverent to him, and I respect him, and so I'm going to keep his commandments. And God allows me to under the sphere of that, he allows me to enjoy things. He allows me to enjoy life, that he wants me to enjoy life. He wants me to rejoice. He wants me to have fun. But if I decide to live my life without him, then what am I actually living life for? Maybe I want to finish off with the words of Jesus, and maybe use his own words here. At the end of Mark chapter 8. Oh, rats. Switch my slides up. Now I got to do it a different way. Stick with me here. So you might struggle with, like, what's the point of my life? In fact, like, you might have gone to church your whole life and struggle with that question. You might today be struggling with that question. Like, what's the point? Why keep going? Why keep coming here? Why come back here tomorrow? I don't want to hear him again. Like, what's the point of any of this? You might struggle with that question. Here's one thing I want you to do. Think of the alternative. Remove God from the equation. What are you left with? What's left in your life? What's left in life without God? But a people who are waiting to die with nothing after this. Now, here are the words of Jesus. I knew it's coming, I think. Yes, it is. I knew it. Someone read Mark chapter 8 here in these verses. If you can't read it, I can read it for you.
If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel will save it. For what does the profit of man gain the world and forfeit his soul? For what will a man give his name for his soul? For whoever changes me and my words is adulterer and sinful generation.
What's your life worth to you? What's the point of it? My hope is that you would realize that your life is worth more than whatever the world is trying to tell you. That your life is worth more than whatever sometimes you're tempted to tell yourself. My hope is that you would realize, actually, in this section, he just finishes talking about the fact that he's going to die and be risen again. We're going to have that. We're going to study that tomorrow. But that God thought that your life was valuable enough that he decided to die for you, to give your life a point, to give it a meaning. My hope is that you would see that as well. We're going to spend some time, again, throughout the rest of this weekend, considering this idea, what's the point? What's the point in who we are? What's the point in what we do? What's the point in God coming to save us? Why did God even make you in the first place? Like, what does he want? Where do I have any value? I think there'll be more uplifting than this one. I don't know, it feels like a downer, but hopefully it was more encouraging. But I appreciate y'all being here. I appreciate your attention. I appreciate the comments. I especially appreciate the guys who ran. Y'all are my boys. Appreciate it. Jesse, do you mind leading us in a word of prayer? And we will have the final remarks. Amen.